This is the Deeper Understandings column, entitled Day 1 and the Eighth Day of Creation. It's written for us by S.D. Gierre, is a professor of biblical interpretation at Wartburg Theological Seminary in Dubuque, Iowa. The first day of creation and weekly Christian worship are intimately related. Understanding this connection can help frame the cosmic nature of the central rhythm of our life together as Christians. A single word in Hebrew, often translated into English as in the beginning, initiates not only the book of Genesis, but the whole of Scripture. There is simple beauty in this single word, before which there was nothing. Creation doesn't emerge from a primordial struggle as it did in the creation stories of the ancient Israelites' neighbors. Rather, out of nothing, not even another word or a syllable, the cosmos emerges. In the first three verses of Genesis, God creates the heavens and the earth, not into fully formed cosmos, but first into an unrefined, unformed heap. The text describes this: the earth was a formless void, and darkness covered the face of the deep, while a wind from God swept over the face of the waters. There's a lot going on in this description. The picture is of a wet and murky mess shrouded in darkness. While void of form, this early picture of creation is not void of God. The verse ends by speaking of a wind from God sweeping over the waters. What is translated wind from God in the New Revised Standard Version can as faithfully be translated either breath of God or spirit of God as well. God doesn't create and run. Even with the murky mess, God is present. The presence of God, creator of heaven and earth, then speaks, "Let there be light." And with the greatest of ease, the Lord speaks light into being. This first specific creative act of God shares the simple beauty of the story's first word. From the void, there was light. From nothing, God creates the dark and wet, murky mess, and into this, God speaks light into being, then declaring this light good, and then separating the light from the darkness. And so, God begins moving the murky mess from chaos to order. Fast forward through the rest of the story to the seventh day, from nothing to chaos to an ordered cosmos. Much has been created and put into order, including us humans. But the formation of time doesn't reach its fullness until all after all else is done. That is, establishing Sabbath. God rested and blessed this seventh day and hallowed it. This is the pinnacle of God's creative activity. As God spoke light into the darkness and with the greatest of ease, so God completes this creative movement with a blessing of the Sabbath, not merely for God, but for all of creation. Christians, including Martin Luther, have associated Sabbath with Sunday. While there is a long tradition of understanding Sunday as a day of rest, as Sabbath, there's another framework for understanding Sunday that flows from day one. When Christians gather, we do so on Sunday to celebrate Jesus' victory over death. Sunday, the day after the Sabbath, is the day of Jesus' resurrection. In Matthew's Gospel, the account of the empty tomb begins, "After the Sabbath, as the first day of the week was dawning." The connection between the day of Jesus' resurrection and the first day of creation was a rich source of understanding for the significance of Sunday. The first day of the new creation, initiated by Jesus rising from the dead, was rooted in the first day of the old creation. Not just any old first day. The day of Jesus' resurrection was referred to as the eighth day, a new pattern within the fabric of time, the weekly cross-pollinization of the old creation with the new. The language of the eighth day first hits circulation among Christians in the Epistle of Barnabas, an apocryphal New Testament text dating to around the year 100 CE. Barnabas speaks of the eighth day as the beginning of another world, the day in which we also celebrate with gladness the eighth day in which Jesus also rose from the dead and was made manifest and ascended into heaven. While not using such specific language, John 20 sheds further light on this connection. The crucified and risen Jesus shows up to Mary Magdalene as well as to the disciples behind locked doors. Twice. All of these encounters were on the first day of the week, the first two of the day of Jesus' resurrection, and the third the following week. Amid grief and fear and uncertainty, the crucified and risen Christ shows up speaking peace. The incarnate Word, the speech of the speaker, "Let there be light," is also himself the light that shines in the darkness. So when we Christians are gathered by the Spirit of God around word and sacrament on the first day of the week, the crucified and risen Lord shows up, and a new creation breaks into the old with the promise of forgiveness and life. Ordinary time is reoriented toward the fullness of time, which encounters the Christian within the assembly of the ever-new Word of Light and Life.